This is Alex. I'm from Boston.
Hello, this is Jackie, and I'm from Houston.
Hey, this is Rahul from Stanford.
And we are the Premier Chefs.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm one of your hosts, Jackie, and I'm coming to you happy and excited today, and I am very sure my co-host and good friend, Rahul, you must be very excited as well.
Pochettino's at the wheel, tell me how good. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to get carried away, but it does feel good.
Listen, my friend, I'm chuckling here because you're one of many a Chelsea fan that has had a topsy-turvy season, but oh, how quickly that dip has become a rise, and we are moving from Pochettino out, get rid of Nicholas Jackson, Nani Madueke doesn't know what he's doing, to all's well in Stamford Bridge again. That Stamford Bridge is rocking, jumping, thumping, we're happy, and listen, when the goals go in the way that they do go in, it papers over a lot of cracks, my friends. It paper over a lot of cracks.
Isn't that the beauty of being a football fan? You go from one week to all doom and gloom. You pick up a result, and suddenly you're looking up and saying, "We can do this. We can make a push for top six." but as we know, there's always a reality check around the corner. So I'm not going to be negative, but that's the beauty of being a football fan. And in this case, for the last 18 months or so, being a Chelsea fan.
It really is. And I think it's one of those where it can kind of numb that pain that you felt just last week in watching Chelsea Football Club. And obviously, I mean, a couple of weekends ago when we've seen a poor performance, specifically against Arsenal, I think is one that comes to mind. But how quickly you can forget that and say, listen, they're one of the teams at the top of the table. We're doing our own thing. And quickly we start looking and saying, is sixth on? And I think that's been our text message chain for the last few days here. Sixth on, sixth off. And before we dive into the West Ham review, Manchester United have gone ahead and lost 4-0 to Crystal Palace. So Crystal Palace have done us a huge favor here, at least in the race for seventh. I wouldn't say for sixth just yet, but Conference League, here we come, Rahul.
I don't know, man. I don't want to talk about it because every time you and I have spoken about it, we've messed it up. So at this point, I'm like, I might as well not talk about it, get my hopes up, and let's just see how this plays out.
Fair enough. You can see how I said that it's papering over cracks because the crack showed up real quickly for Rahul there, and he's done talking about this. Let's move on and cover West Ham, Rahul. Let's do our traditional review here. We did say that the fitness of the team was under question and maybe it would be difficult for anybody else to come in. We got some good news in the likes of Nkunku back on the bench. But why don't you take us through the starting 11?
Yeah, Petrovic in goal, Chalobah, Thiago Silva, Badiashile, Cucurella in a back four, Caicedo and Gallagher as a midfield duo, Madueke, Palmer, Mudrik, and Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah, so a very easy to predict starting 11 given all the fitness issues that we've had. But I mentioned Nkunku, Disasi was back, Malagusto was back. We had Raheem Sterling, we had Levi Colwell. My goodness, we had an almost fully fit 18 for the senior 18, I should say. I don't want to discredit the young players that have come in and stepped up during the absences of the senior players, but we had an almost fully fit senior 18, and it was nice to see a strong-ish bench. And we were saying, listen, if things don't go our way, there's some changes that can come on and, you know, potentially help the team. But I don't think we needed many changes, Rahul. This team, this Chelsea team, where has this Chelsea team been the last 9 months, my friend? They were brilliant, to say the least. They started like a house on fire. They meant business. They went from one London derby to another London derby and said, listen, we're fired up for this. We want to show the fans that all of London is blue. Of course, we're forgetting about Arsenal for just a minute here. But look, we started so well, my friend. I don't think there's any better words I can use to describe how motivated the boys were for this game.
Yeah, no, it was surprising. It was surprising because we had just played on Thursday night. The emotions of that game, winning that game, beating Tottenham, and coming out of it and saying, now we've got a Sunday game to prepare for, not much time to rest, to recuperate. And to see the team come out and start with that kind of energy, that kind of attitude, is something like you said, where has this been for the last 9 months or so? Because we've done it on a Thursday night before, we've done it midweek before, and then we've gone away to a Sheffield United and not been the team that we thought we were going to be, or we've gone away to a different team and not been the team that we thought we were supposed to be. So, and it, you saw it in our predictions. I think we both were like 1-0, 2-1, 2-0. We just didn't think that there was going to be that much into this game. And not all was on because of Chelsea. It was also because of West Ham. You expected them to kind of kick on from getting a draw against Liverpool the week before. But credit to Pochettino, credit to the boys. They came out and said, this is our home, and we're just going to kick on from where we left off on Thursday night.
Definitely. And you mentioned, you know, the Sheffields and maybe even the Bournemouths that we've not had great performances against. And maybe those were the teams, with all due respect to them, that we would have hoped we would have had better performance against. And you mentioned this, and I fully agree. It's West Ham has had a good season, no matter what other fans may say, even their own fans. I think West Ham have been pretty decent for a team that sold maybe their star player for 100 million. And yes, they reinvested it, but maybe in different areas. And I think they are doing okay for what they have. But I expected a bit more of a challenge from West Ham. And that's not to disrespect us, right? I think that West Ham, like I said, have been decent. But this team starts off so well, Rahul. And I think we've talked about this in the previous couple episodes, is something's clicking, something's changed. Some words have been said. And I don't know if it's sparred on by Thiago Silva's message of I'm leaving and Chelsea need to come together, or Pochettino has finally found the right things. He's come out and said, I had to change things tactically, but before I can change things tactically, these players have to understand what it is to play for Chelsea Football Club and have that enjoyment. And I must say, in the last game, and more so in this game, I'm really seeing it. And we'll give some specific examples as we walk through, but I want to jump into that first goal. A cross comes in from Noni Madueke on the right-hand side. He's been one that's exciting, and he gets you out of your seat. Comes to Jackson. I think he tries to finish it. It gets blocked by a West Ham defender. It falls to the one and only Ice Cole Palmer. And Rahul, we said this a couple episodes ago. You put your house on him to finish. He didn't that time. But if I bet again, I would have won my house back because he finishes this time. And it's a lovely finish in the net, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's what we've come to expect from him. He's alive, he's ready, and he's aware of what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. And he just finishes it off really well. And I've almost felt in the last few weeks where we've seen Madueke come in on the right and Cole's had to go central, it's maybe taken away from him a little bit. But he finds a way, and he's always just drawn towards the ball, maybe similar to a certain Frank Lampard from a few years ago. But Cole Palmer is a totally different player, and we've seen that this season. And who else to put us in the lead than the boy himself?
Yeah, really. And I thought it was one of those, just like you summarized it, very alert, very aware of what's going on. And honestly, once it falls to that left foot of his, I always have faith that he's going to find a way to bend it into the corner. I think the keeper gets a slight hand on it, but not only does he get the precision, he gets the power that he wants to slot this home. And scoring an early goal takes the pressure off. And I think we've had a lot of pressure this season, but coming from the Tottenham win, maybe there's a bit more of a bounce in our step. And you could see that with the way they were playing and flowing down. It comes from 1-2 very quickly, Rahul, and we were putting a lot of pressure on West Ham. The second goal, again, I see a lot more freedom, or at least I feel the confidence in this team. Cole Palmer finds himself out on the right-hand side this time. Noni Madueke has kind of worked himself into the middle. Cole Palmer plays a little bit of a 1-2 with Caicedo, and he pings a beautiful ball. And I must say, I was kind of hoping this ball would work out for Madueke to spin and take a shot. He struggles to control it. It pings up in the air, and I said, you know what? This opportunity is lost, but who's alive? Who's alert? Who's ready to get the business done? Conor Gallagher finds the space. And Rahul, another lovely finish from Conor Gallagher to put us 2-0 up.
I'm going to start calling him Conor Gallagher because he's contributing through the goals. And we've needed someone apart from Cole Palmer or some of the attacking players to contribute from midfield. And we've seen Conor Gallagher, who's dropped a little bit deeper to play alongside Caicedo, but has now been given the freedom to push forward because of the switch we've spoken about with Cucurella, that you almost suddenly have the ability for him, Conor Gallagher, and Cole Palmer to interchange. Cole can drop a little bit deeper, play the ball in this instance as a playmaker, And then Connor runs into the box and is able to finish it off. And a very good finish with the volley that he has to also be alert towards. He also has to be aware of what's going to happen. And a good finish. And suddenly you're saying 30 minutes in, Chelsea are 2-0 up. We've been here before, by the way. what is going to happen now? But this is a different Chelsea side in the sense that they've maybe learned from the fact that we've been here before and wanted to keep going and not making mistakes at the back, which would only set up ourselves for going on and getting the third, fourth, and fifth.
Spot on, my friend. We have been here before way too many times, and we go into halftime, and we've always had this debate between you and I of what the heck is Pochettino saying to these players at halftime, that they come out and they look absolutely miserable, they're missing a beat, they're not able to get the business done, and 2-0 becomes 2-1. We freak out, we panic, 2-1 becomes 2-2. And from there, Chelsea really fall apart. Either we're going to just hold on to 2-2 and pray, or in some cases, the team will overtake us 3-2 and we've thrown away a perfectly healthy lead. You've asked me before, why doesn't this team know how to kill games? I've never had an answer for you. 5 or 6 minutes later, Rahul, we have just been beating West Ham down at goal. Madueke has a couple of shots. He's cutting in and curling, and I said he's been exciting all game. We are trying to kill this game. You can feel it. You can find the energy there. We get a corner. It comes all the way to the far post to Thiago Silva. He heads it back across goal. I don't think he knows who it's coming to. Who is at the corner post there? It's Noni Madueke. The last person I would think would find space in that little corner and then nudge it in with his forehead to get it to 3-0. He runs off celebrating. I think he doesn't even know the ball hits him on his forehead and goes in, because you could see how excited and happy he is. He's like, I scored with my head. It gives me a little bit of Eden Hazard when he scored with his head a long time. He's like, I scored with my head and I didn't expect that one. So you can tell the happiness they get from getting that goal. And again, taking that 2-0, which I think we all know is an extremely dodgy scoreline if you concede one, having that little bit of buffer going into halftime must have been a big relief for this team.
Absolutely. And the fact that West Ham themselves had maybe hit the post in the build-up to the third goal and were trying to make something happen and get back into the game, at least make it 2-1, the fact that we got that third goal essentially killed the game in that first half. And then you come back and you say, now it's about game management. Of course, getting an extra goal or two helps. But as a team, the game management portion is something that the younger squad needs to learn and adapt to. So that was something that I was interested in seeing coming out of the second half. And honestly, like you've touched on, we've questioned what is happening at halftime, because we've been in leads before. We've been in a position where we're comfortable in the first half and suddenly we come back and don't look like the team that we did in the first half. So something has changed, and it's changed for the good, because we come out and we continue where we left off. We're not resting on the fact that we had a good first half. And that's what we want to see, right? A young team, yes, it needs to learn about game management, but part of game management is just going out and getting the job done and killing it for sure.
Yeah, listen, you said we come out and do the business done. I think that's always the fear, is that even at 3-0 up, do we come out and start to get complacent? Do we start to make silly mistakes? Do we do the unforced errors that have really hurt us this season? If you go and look at the goals we conceded, I think we were pushing close to 6 seed this season. I don't remember the exact number, which is one of the highest goals conceded that Chelsea have had in I don't know how many years, which is all down to a lot of mistakes, a lot of poor game management, as you've said. And coming back in, I thought, you know what, 3-0 up, maybe these boys will take their foot off the accelerator, the game will slow down, West Ham will have a couple of options, couple of opportunities. But Rahul, within 7-8 minutes of that second half, who combines? Noni Madueke and Nicholas Jackson. And listen, it's an opportunity for Noni Madueke, through on goal, to do what any forward would do. And when I say forward, I don't mean as a striker, but an attacking player. Just take a shot with 3-0 up. I think you're perfectly in your right to make that happen. And the Noni Madueke of 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, he takes that shot all day. Hell, that Noni Madueke takes that shot from maybe 10 yards behind, because he's just excited to shoot and release the ball. The Noni Madueke that we saw for this particular play was a little more calm, a little more composed. And I think the best thing for me is it felt as though there was a little bit of team chemistry coming together. They're finally feeling, I know where my friend is going to be. And I say friend, and I'm not using that lightly, because you can see a little bit of a relationship forming between these players of, I know where my friend's going to be. I can score this goal. I can add to my tally, or I can just simply slot this to the left and Nicholas Jackson can get a goal. And as a striker, at least as a player playing as a striker for us, how big will that be for my friend? He does the right thing. Jackson has the easiest goal he will probably score this season, and he's missed some pretty easy ones for most of the season. But you can see how they come together. They embrace each other. Jackson is really, really pleased with Madueke giving him this opportunity to get the goal from an easy tap-in. And I have to believe deep down, Madueke is really happy that he got the assist to get his friend a goal that maybe will help catapult him to more goals in the future for Chelsea.
Yeah, and that's what we want to see, right? That team chemistry, the ability to say, maybe I've taken this a little too far and my teammate is in a better position and I'll lay it off to him, because the team comes first. Yes, we're 3-0 up and you can take that shot. If you miss, we still probably will go on to win. But you're putting no doubts or putting no questions against the fact that let's get that fourth goal. Let Jackson get a goal as well, because he's been had a tough time this season with you, with the chances that you mentioned that he's missed. And that's the kind of collaboration we want to see between Nani Madueke and Nicholas Jackson versus what we saw a few weeks ago, where you're fighting over a penalty that really isn't for you to call or take. And it looks like you can see the maturity in the last few weeks. And I know it's not the same situation, but we're just seeing a kind of a switch in mentality, a switch in saying, I'll help my teammate out. I've got a goal already, and I may get another one, but at the end of the day, it's about helping my teammate out, helping the team. But we need to talk about that ball from Chalaba into Nani Madueke, who I don't know what Chalaba has been eating and drinking the last few weeks, but whatever it is, let him continue, because he's turned into Didier Drogba in the box scoring against Tottenham, and then Cesc Fabregas against West Ham playing a ball like a playmaker from his own half into Nani Madueke to open up and split the defense, which creates the fourth goal.
Listen, and I know you say it's a Cesc Fabregas, but this long ball, Rahul, you and I have screamed for it all season long. Sometimes Chelsea try to be a little too cute when there's a lot of pressure on us. We try to play 1-2 passes, get out of it. And I've said, if you're not in a good position, just lump that ball forward and something will happen. Obviously, in this case, it's not about being pressed or pressure. I think it's about the awareness of the football pitch and understanding that I've got a couple of players that are in space. I think I can make a long ball work better than trying to do a slow buildup that, quite frankly, hasn't always worked for us this season. We always want to walk the ball into the net. And Chalaba kind of rolled back the years, Rahul, and it's high praise for him when I say this is a type of ball that maybe a John Terry would hit a long time ago, where he would just spin one up and Drogba would control it and something would happen. And even in more recent years, a David Luiz, who was a ball-playing centre-back, not always playing it short, he would look up and give a long ping forward to Acosta, and it would just be route one football. And sometimes you need that. You just want to get the goal out of nothing. Not saying this is out of nothing, but it's a beautiful ball played from the back, which just gives us an opportunity for the midfielders to get a break. And as far as wingers and maybe even Cole Palmer goes, listen, you don't have to be the only creative outlet when your centre-back, or your right-back in this case, is finding the space to get the balls through. So kudos to him, Rahul. And I think a lot of Chelsea fans will be saying, if we're going into the market to look for a centre-back and we're trying to sell Chalaba, what are we doing? And that's a whole conversation that can happen around Chalaba. It can happen around Conor Gallagher. There are a couple of these guys that the Chelsea hierarchy is looking to move on for finances. And as Chelsea fans, I think that would be a huge mistake. We need to be very careful with what we do in the market. And honestly, for some of these things, having guys who have been here since they're 6, 7, 8, you can see the joy and the pleasure they get playing for Chelsea. And that will only permeate to the rest of the players that maybe have only been here a year or have been here a couple of years and don't know what it is to be a Chelsea boy. So excited for all of them to get that goal. And Rahul, 48, 50 minutes in, the business is done. You can start bringing on some of your injured players to get minutes. So we started to see the likes of Nkunku come on, Malagusto, who has been brilliant for this season. So good to see him coming into the fold. Gilchrist gets a few minutes. How are you feeling at 4-0?
Surprised. I have to be honest. I had gone out the night before. It was an earlier kickoff on Sunday here. So I didn't wake up for the first half. And then the way I woke up was I eventually got a text from you saying WTF. And no other context, nothing else to say. All he said was WTF. And I'm like, oh my God, are we losing miserably? Yeah. What is going on? And so I turn it on and it's 4-0 and I'm like, WTF.
You're rubbing your eyes there, staring at the screen saying, am I in dreamland?
So actually, I thought, are we losing miserably, or is Cole Palmer just had a madness and scored 4 goals himself? Yeah. Because I know Erling Haaland had done his job the day before, and Cole obviously trying to go for the golden boot. Anyway, 4-0 and I'm like, what is going on? Because I did not ever expect us to be in that position. But thoroughly deserved. Yes, West Ham had their chances. As I mentioned, they hit the post a few times. But we were clinical. We were pushing forward. We weren't saying, oh, you hit the post, let's defend. We did defend, of course. But it was just all in all very refreshing to see from this Chelsea team, because we've made it tough for ourselves in many instances. We've made it tough for each other in many instances by putting each other in a difficult spot as teammates. But in this game, just everything seemed to be working and clicking. And sometimes that just happens when you've been putting in the hard work and you just need a little bit of luck.
Yeah, and it's difficult for us as Chelsea fans. You said this early on in the segment, to get too excited about this. Listen, I'm over the moon. I'm ecstatic. All of the things you want to say that bring joy while you're watching Chelsea Football Club. It's difficult to get too happy about the future. And by that, I mean, Chelsea has done this all season long, where we go on a couple of good wins, we get a high, and immediately we get a low. And so it's happened a lot quickly. I think it was a 6-0 against Everton, and then a 5-0 loss against Arsenal, and then a 2-0 wonderful performance against Tottenham. Now a great, great win against West Ham. Do we kick off from here and show that we can continue, or am I expecting a low? So that's where I'm reserved in my celebrations a little bit. That's where I'm worried that this team has shown they can play for each other. They do have the skill set to finish. They have flashes of brilliance. Why is it that they are so inconsistent? And Pochettino has told it to us all season long. I'm hopeful they can kick on from here for the last few games, because while we don't want to have this discussion, the push for actually staying in a European spot is on at this point in time. And so I'm hopeful we can do that and continue. Rahul, let's talk about the fifth and final goal. They're calling him the new Nicholas Jackson, the shaven-headed one, focused on just getting the ball into the net. He has made this run, which is just playing off the shoulder of a defender, a direct run bearing in on goal. He's had a couple of opportunities this way this season. He's either put them wide, skied them, not made them work. In this case, he gets played in with a beautiful ball from Caicedo directly into his path. One might say he could have been offside, but listen, he gets the opportunity. He runs in on goal. Nicholas Jackson, again, similar to Noni Madueke 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, he's either hitting that one at the goalkeeper, he takes an extra touch and goes wide and misses it, or he blasts it into the fans. His finish was precise. And I think under the pressure, under the speed, under the movement, under the history that he's had being one-on-one with goalkeepers, he did brilliantly well to just slot that into the net. And it just shows, maybe he's getting a little bit of confidence, not just from the Noni goal, but the team overall playing well together.
Yeah, absolutely. And he needs to continue making these runs, because in certain cases like this one, he'll get the ball. In other cases, he might open up the defense for someone else to run through, Cole Palmer, Conor Gallagher, whoever it is. And so he's young. We've said this all season long. Yes, he's missed. I think you and I were looking it up, 22 big chances in the Premier League. But he still got up to 13 Premier League goals now, which is not a bad return for a striker in his first season. And when was the last time? I'm thinking to Diego Costa, and maybe I'm blanking here for the last 8 or 10 years. When was the last time we had a striker that actually got into double digits of Premier League goals, non-penalty Premier League goals as well? So credit to him, good finish. VAR did what they had to do and halted the celebrations. But he held his run, which has been another thing that we've been critical of him, is don't go too early, you know, time your runs a little bit better. But he did that in this case and deservedly got his second goal of the game.
Yeah, and 5-0 is one of those things where I think you and I can be super excited, and my WTF at 4-0 becomes, oh my goodness, at 5-0. And yes, you have to pinch yourself a little bit because Chelsea have gone in the last four or five games high score lines either way, whether we've scored or conceded, but we've made the business happen. And I repeat myself, I hope we can kick off from here and really, really get this done and get the next few wins and stay in contention for Europe. I know we want to talk about Nottingham Forest, Raul, but I want to squeeze in a little bit of transfer rumors. We are getting into the summer here and a few things are coming up. I hope I don't pronounce this name incorrectly, but Tosin Adarabioyo, he's going to be a free agent from Fulham. He's a center back. And between a lot of news agencies, they're reporting that Chelsea have asked the conditions for his salary. So again, a different maybe transfer strategy going for someone who's available free on the market. But I do like it's somebody that is in the Premier League, somebody who is a little bit older. He is 25, 26 years old. So much older than what we've been targeting in the last few seasons here, which is good. I can't say I know terribly too much about him, Rahul, but what do you think of the transfer strategy of adding another centre-back? Is this going back to, are we going to be selling Chiloba to make funds and go for a free player in this case? Or are we just looking at a squad that maybe needs a refresh and a couple of senior players to bulk it out?
I mean, I don't know if we're selling Chiloba. Hopefully not, because we've seen in the last few weeks that there is a player there, and there's a player there that can play right back, can play center back, left back if needed. He's played in a three under Tuchel. He's now playing in the four. If given the right coaching and guidance, I think Chalobah could be a good squad player in the 25. I'm not saying he would be the first name on the team sheet, but you also need to create competition, and it's not easy to create competition when you have a player that's been injured in Fofana for a long time. And no fault of his, it's one of the unfortunate things. But with Thiago Silva leaving, Fofana unsure of his condition, might not be a bad idea, especially on, as you're saying, on a free transfer to bring in another Man City youth prospect in Tosin. Maybe that's our strategy now, is let's just go get Man City youth players because it's worked with Cole Palmer. I'm just kidding. But those are his roots. And wouldn't have been the first name that I would have gone for, but we also need to do some smart business in the world of FFP. So I'm not against it. Might be something that works out for us.
Yeah, listen, and you talked about Fofana and you talked about Silva leaving, but the fitness record of our other center backs has not been great. De Sassi's been in and out of injury. Badiashile was out with a long-term injury. Chaloba has only just recently come back. So it might be good to have another body in there, especially given the injury and fitness issues we've had. So I think it's good business. Again, I don't know much about him, and I like your little cheeky remark about him being a Manchester City youth player. If he can be even 50% of what Cole Palmer is for us, I think that will be just a great signing overall. So a lot to come. The last one I want to talk about is one that doesn't go away, and that is Victor Osimhen. You and I have debated this one. We've talked about it. I don't want to spend too much time on it. The rumors are going around that Chelsea have inquired about a package that would work to get Victor Osimhen over to England. Whether or not he actually wants to join Chelsea is a whole different conversation. I guess it would depend on Europe and things like that. But I'm hearing that Napoli have got a release clause of 120, 130 million. Chelsea are trying to make a deal work with maybe 80, 90 and some couple of exchange players. Interested to hear your thoughts on this one. Is it going to be the signing that you think will help? Is it going to be a signing that maybe impedes what we're building here? He's going to come in probably for big money. I would imagine for big wages that might upset the team. I'm just looking to get your feedback high level on Victor Osimhen.
You know, that's a name that has come up quite often, and he won the league with Napoli last season. He's maybe not had the best season this season, but again, he's 25. He's spoken pretty openly about his interest in joining the Premier League, and so it may not be a bad move, but given that he's coming off of a shaky season, I think he's picked up a couple of injuries. This is where I want to see our ownership not just give in to over 100 million. Let's negotiate a little bit. If it has to go towards the end of the transfer window, so be it. I would love to get it done earlier if that's who we're going for. But let's not just fall for 100 plus million because we've done it for others and that's what Napoli would like. Let's be smart about it because, like we said, we need to do some smart business while also bringing in good talent. So I'm not against it, and I think Osimhen would be a good addition to the squad. But I'd like to see us spend a little under 100 million than going north of that figure.
It's a tough one, right? Because I think that he's a quality player. I worry that he may block the potential of Nicholas Jackson, and people listening may be laughing and saying, I don't rate Nicholas Jackson. He doesn't have potential. But look, there is something under the hood for Nicholas Jackson. He has got a decent amount of goals this season for us, and that's in his first season, him being a young player, him maybe not finding his true potential just yet. I'm not against the Osimhen thing. I want to be very clear. I think there is a player in there that could come and maybe elevate this Chelsea team to the next level. And who knows, he might even bring that air of competition, Rahul, that you talked about, that spurs on Nicholas Jackson to go to the next level and say, I don't want him to keep me out of the team. Or there has been a lot of rumors that our left side has not been particularly strong, with Raheem Sterling underperforming and Mudrik maybe not living up to his potential. Maybe Nicholas Jackson can find his way and squeeze into the left-hand side. I'm not sure. We have a lot of options here. One thing I would say for the ownership is seeing us lose in transfer after transfer, and lose is a harsh term, right? We do get brilliant players in the likes of Enzo, who's unfortunately injured now. And while Caicedo started slow, he's showing us the true potential of what we paid for in Caicedo. But seeing us lose on the financial side, where the player could have been available 6 months later for 60 or 70 and we went and paid the full 100, or let's get the business done for 90 and we wait to the last day and Liverpool push us to 115 or so for Caicedo. I say this very humbly, and maybe I'm wrong. It might be good for us to lose financially and walk away from a deal, because it sets the precedence for any future business, especially if FFP is looming, to say, listen, the Chelsea owners have figured it out. They're going to set a price. And if the price is above and way above what they're willing to pay, they've shown they're willing to walk away from negotiations, which means you may not get your target this time, but next time you go to the negotiating table, you've told them, listen, here's my budget. If it's going above it, I'm walking away. And you kind of maybe set a little bit more of a serious tone and get the business done for a little more affordable. I guess that's my takeaway from that situation there.
Yeah, and there's two things with this Nicholas Jackson piece that you mentioned. I know we've spoken about this and said maybe it'll stunt his growth, and having a big name striker will not maybe mean he doesn't get as many minutes. But it's Chelsea Football Club. You and I fondly talk about the time when Mourinho came in and we had two strong, maybe three strong players per position.
Yeah.
And Mourinho had the opportunity to rotate and pick and perform at the highest level with the squad. So it shouldn't come as something that Nicholas Jackson fears. It should be something he takes into his stride and wants to compete with Osimhen. And the other thing, Jackie, is yes, I agree with you on the financial piece. We've hired some technical directors and footballing directors that we can't just say Osimhen's the only one on that list.
Right.
We need to have maybe three, four players on there. And if it's getting to a point where we're about to overspend on an Osimhen, let's look down that list and work our way down. Because we do have Nicholas Jackson, and he's maybe a year into his Premier League life or career, which allows an Osimhen or whoever comes in from abroad to not gives them a little bit of room to adapt while we have someone that can carry the torch for a bit, and then maybe we do that transition. So, look, I think we're getting a little maybe carried away with what we've have seen in the last few games and saying things are looking good, but I think we're headed in the right direction based on just the way this season has gone. We've made some progress. We're up to 7, but the work doesn't end here. We still need to make it to top.
Very well said. And so hopefully that is going to happen next season, but let's focus on this season, my friend. Let's talk about Nottingham Forest. We are going away to play Nottingham Forest. In all likelihood, on paper, Rahul, it is a Chelsea win day after day. However, Nottingham Forest are sitting in 17th. They are fighting to stay in this league. Luton Town are hot on their heels with just a couple points behind. You best believe that Nottingham Forest are going to be up for it. They're going to want to give us a difficult time. They're going to want to try and get the win. They just want to keep climbing the table and stay as far away from Luton as possible, right? So given that, I don't know if you've read some stats out there that you can share with me, or you just have this deep feeling to ruin my evening and say, here are all the great things that Chelsea have done and we've beaten Nottingham 100 times, but look, it never happens. Go ahead, my friend. What can you share with me?
So you'll remember Nottingham Forest beat us at the Bridge back in September. So they're looking to complete their first league double over Chelsea since 1978-79, when they were the reigning top flight champions under Brian Clough. So again, it's been a long time. They obviously did beat us at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea have won just 2 of their last 10 away league games against Nottingham Forest, drawing 4 and losing 4, winning 1-0 in November 1994 and 3-1 in February 1999. Following their 3-1 win at Sheffield United last time out, Nottingham Forest are looking to win consecutive Premier League games for the 3rd time since their promotion in 2022. So originally I would have said the charity FC team that we support is going to show up and maybe just fall apart and help Nottingham Forest's relegation battle. But dare I say it, this seems to be a different Chelsea team in the last week or so.
Listen, my friend, I was listening to these stats and I couldn't help but crack a smile a couple of times because typically, you tell me that Chelsea have been successful. Chelsea have battered this team 100-0 in the last 5 games. There's no way that Chelsea can lose. And of course, on game day, Chelsea lose. However, these stats are the inverse, my friend. Nottingham Forest seem to have had the upper hand in history. Not necessarily all of the time, but in recent history, at least this season, they have had the upper hand as well. And so maybe it's time. It is time for those stats to break, and it's an opportunity for Chelsea to go forward and say, we can do this. We can actually get the win. And it's kind of funny, Rahul, because we're looking at the team that's sitting in 17th. They're looking to get out of getting relegated, and we're saying, oh, maybe Chelsea can get the business done. But given what I've seen in the last few games, barring the Arsenal one, I think we should get the business done, right? But it's always a big if. Why don't we do a predicted starting 11, and we can debate the scoreline afterwards?
Yeah, so Petrovic in goal. I think Chalobah will continue at right back, although I'd love to see Malo Gusto. Mm-hmm. Thiago Silva, Badiashile, Cucurella, Caicedo, Conor Gallagher, Madueke, Cole Palmer, Raheem Sterling, and Nicholas Jackson.
Back in the mix. Okay, so you're pulling Raheem Sterling back into the mix. Clearly, Mudryk has not impressed you enough to warrant keeping starting, which is perfectly fine. I think you and I have said that he needed a couple of run of games, and he's done okay, but he hasn't lit the world on fire. So maybe it's a chance for Raheem to come back and get an opportunity in the mix. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, nothing against Mudryk. I think he's played okay. Like I was saying in the Tottenham review, he did occupy Pedro Porro. He did what he had to.
Yep.
But it may just be time to refresh the team just a little bit with Raheem Sterling coming back. And I'm sure Raheem Sterling's been noticing that we've been winning without him. So hopefully he's got the fire in his belly to come back and say, you know what, I can hold that spot down on the left-hand side.
Yeah, listen, a good starting 11, but with the fitness of some of the players coming back, if Malo Gusto is up for it, I'd love to see a Thiago Silva and Chalobah pairing and Malo Gusto sliding out to the right. I think Chalobah has been great for us at right while he's played. He probably is a little more suited to the center back position, and I think between him and Silva, they form a really solid partnership. And I just love Malo Gusto bombing forward on the right role, and it'll be interesting to see with 2 attacking players if that offsets the defense of the team, and maybe that's where Pochettino might be a little bit hesitant to make a change. Either way, I'm excited. I hope that we can get the business done. I'm going to push you for your scoreline here, my friend. Are you going for a Chelsea win and breaking all of history, or are you sticking with history and telling me that Forest is going to get the double over us, or are you just going to say, listen, I'm playing it safe, Jackie, we can get a draw here and go home without any damage?
Do you know what? I'm looking at the fixtures. West Ham play Luton before we kick off, and Tottenham play Burnley at the same time. So the 2 teams that we've just beaten in the last week could make it tough for us, because if they both beat Luton and Burnley, effectively, that would leave Nottingham Forest to require 1 point, right, to get the job done, because then Luton would be 4 points behind them with the game to go.
Right.
So now I'm sure Nottingham Forest would like to get it done and dusted in their game at their home patch. So I think it'll be a draw, and that's difficult for me to say because I want United to win this weekend so they could end Arsenal's hopes, which mean if we draw and they win, Conference League is not on, my friend.
Look, I will take it. What is the draw? Are you going for a scoreless draw? Are you going for a 1-1? What are you leaning towards?
I am going to go for what we've done against some of the other relegation teams and go for a 2-2.
Okay. I can, you know, in a perfect world that never happens, but I can see this happening with the ups and downs, which is why I think us saying that these wins are papering over the cracks, because I don't think we've truly used concrete to seal these cracks. I think we are still walking on light confidence. Yes, there's confidence in the team, but it's light confidence, and something can honestly break that confidence if things are not going in the right pathway. However, you know me very well, my friend, and people who are listening to us know that I like to be the positive one on the podcast, and I like to try and, you know, bring a smile to our listeners when they're listening to this one. And then deep down, I also think we should be getting the business done. I think we can get the business done. So that being said, I think that we're in a hot streak of form. I think we can get 3 goals, but we will probably leak 1. So I'm going to go for a 3-1 win to Chelsea.
A Callum Hudson-Odoi goal coming against Chelsea.
It would be the best way for Chelsea to concede a goal with an ex-Chelsea player coming to rub it in our faces. But listen, as long as it's a win, I'm okay with Callum Hudson-Odoi getting one and just continuing with his career. He was good for us while he was fit and healthy. So if he can continue this way, why not, my friend?
Why not, indeed. And I'll take a 3-1 because I do want United to win this weekend. And I'm sure you do as well, because we want this title race to end. But Fulham could play a role in it too against Man City. So we'll keep a close eye on it.
We definitely will. Rahul, listen, I need to drop off the episode here, but I know you're going to continue with our good friend Ray and talk about the women who are also in an exciting race. I know a few weeks ago we said that this might not shape up for them, but it's changing. It's turning around. So I'm going to drop off. I'm going to sign off and say bye. But why don't you continue with our listeners and let Ray give us an update on what's going on there?
Thanks, Jackie.
All right, switching gears here. I know we've covered the men's weekend and upcoming weekend game against Nottingham Forest, but I'm now joined by my good friend Ray, who is going to chat with me about the women's team, and it has been quite a dramatic last few weeks. But before we get into that, Ray, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Recovering from a bit of an injury myself. I managed to dislocate my thumb the other week on Monday, so that was fun. But other than that, all good.
Hopefully it wasn't out of or due to the ups and downs that we've had as Chelsea women's fans.
Definitely not. Definitely not. Just a bit of a sporting injury, but no, on the mend.
All right, well, we wish you a speedy recovery, but let's jump into it. So, Ray, the last time we spoke, we said every game is a final. We could be on for a quad, or I guess at that point a treble, because we'd been knocked out of or lost in the final against Arsenal with the Conte Cup. And things were looking positive, and we were saying we're going to at least pick up a trophy or two. We knew Barcelona was coming, 2 games against them. We said it was going to be difficult. But now we have the benefit of actually going back and talking about what transpired. So we came back from that international break where we spoke, lost 2-1 to Manchester United in this FA Cup semi-final, did not make it to the final in that competition, which brought us down to 2 trophies. What were your thoughts of that final? Did we maybe not show up? Did United just wanted more? Refereeing decisions, as always, may cost us. But overall, I think the team just didn't seem like they were up for it.
Yeah, it was a strange one at Man United. I think we started the game really slow, which kind of seems to be a bit of a theme, recurring theme this season. We can't seem to get into the game. Made a couple of mistakes, went 2-0 down. Got a goal back just before halftime. And then I didn't see the game. I was working. So, but from what I have seen of it, we just did everything but score in the second half. And I think there was a couple of refereeing decisions, penalties that went not our way. And the ones I've seen, they're Stonewall. You know, they are penalties. And it's quite frustrating yet again to be let down by the refereeing in the women's game. But you know, it is what it is. Man United are not a bad side. You know, you've got to give credit to them. They defended against us, and we didn't get that second goal. So you can't really say anything other than that.
Yeah, I've always said it's refereeing decisions and things that are out of our control as a team. It's something that we can't predict, we can't rely on. Yes, it's nice to have the decisions and for people to do their jobs right as terms of referees, but as a unit, like you said, as a team, if we start off slow, if we come out of the gates in a semi-final at away to Manchester United, when you know they're looking for revenge, based on the last few years and last year's final, they're always going to want it a little more, and that's where a squad and a team need to step up. And I know we've had injuries. I know we were coming off of the international break. So we lose that game, but we do bounce back against Villa in the game right after in the WSL, winning 3-0, which sets us up well for a Barcelona game away to Barcelona. Was that the right way to respond after the Manchester United defeat against Villa?
Yeah, it was a really good response, actually. I was there and they looked up for it. You know, I think losing the Conti Cup final, then losing that semi-final, the team were up for it against Villa. There was a lot of rotation in that game, obviously looking ahead to the Barcelona game. But yeah, to get a 3-0 win, it was comfortable. I mean, it helped with their goalkeeper getting sent off after about 4 minutes, handling outside the box. It was a great save if it was in the box, but handling the ball outside the box, you can't be doing that. And I think it kind of cost them in the end. But yeah, we looked really good in that game, as I say, with a lot of rotation as well.
Yeah, Aggie Beaver-Jones getting a goal. Hamano and Buchanan on the score sheet as well, which wrapped up a 3-0 win and set us up to go away to Barcelona in the right mood, putting away the cup defeats and focusing on the task ahead. And it wasn't a small task, Ray. We spoke about it last time. Barcelona are the best team on the planet, and we've now faced them 3-4 years in a row, regardless of if it's a semifinal or a final. And it's just a hurdle that we couldn't seem to get over. But we go away, put in a resilient performance, get the win. Aaron Cuthbert gets the goal. And I didn't watch this game, but I was keeping along. I was out doing some stuff, and I'm looking at him like 1-0. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, and you're like, at some point something is going to change, because it's Barcelona. They have goals in them. They're at home. But we held on. I'm not going to say we hung on. We held on. We got the job done. And what a boost for your chances to make a Champions League final, especially going away to the best team and winning. Just talk to me about that game first before we talk about the return leg, because at that point, I think every Chelsea fan believed that this was our year.
Yeah, I mean, what a performance. I was in the same boat as you. I was working, so I couldn't watch the game. So I just kept getting like notifications come through on my phone. And, you know, going 1-0 up, I was like, okay, that's a good start. You know, Aaron with a really good goal, actually. It was a really well-taken finish. And then just to hold on. I mean, we were the first team to beat Barcelona at home for 5 years. And we're the first team to stop them scoring in 8 years at home. Those two things, it's massive. And it's a massive accomplishment for the team. And it was one of the best performances. And it will go down as one of the best performances of Emma Hayes' tenure as manager. Because, I mean, as I say, going away there and actually getting a result is hard. Getting a draw is hard enough. But going there and winning is now impossible. So it was a huge result. And as you say, it gave everyone that little bit of belief that, okay, we could actually do this year.
Yeah, it was a massive result, and maybe one that may not get highlighted as enough in the Emma Hayes era because of what ultimately happens in the second leg. But just doing that to Barcelona and doing it on their home turf, the girls and Emma Hayes deserve massive credit for that. And then you have a week to prepare for the home leg. And you see Stamford Bridge is slowly selling out. We're getting closer and closer to packing it out. And that just tells you the interest and the belief that all Chelsea fans had coming into this game was, I think you had said in the last episode, if we come back with a good result, and I was like, Ray, what do you mean by good result? Like, what would qualify as good? But this far exceeded our expectations in terms of a good result to bring back home to our fans. And in the build-up to it, I think the Barcelona players had maybe alluded to or played some mind games with how physical or some of the decisions that Chelsea gained. But you almost kind of expect that at this level. You know, there's what you play on the pitch, but there's also stuff outside the pitch. And like I was saying, you can only control that much. But in the build-up to a game, you can certainly try to influence certain things. And so we come to the Bridge a week later. It's about 39,398 fans packed into the bridge for a Champions League semi-final for the Chelsea women, which in itself we need to talk about. But what a moment for the girls to come out to the stadium, cheering them on. There were Barcelona fans there too. I was impressed to see that. Before we get into the game, let's just talk about the occasion and what this crowd meant for the girls coming into this fixture.
It was huge. I think, as you say, in the week building up, you just saw that number of tickets available to slowly start ticking down. And then obviously they sold it out, I think, either the day before or the 2 days before the game. And I think having that result away from home boosted it so that, you know, there is the chance they could do something really special here. And I think for the girls, it was huge. I mean, selling out Stamford Bridge is something that they've dreamed of doing for years. So for that to actually become a reality, it's massive. And it was a great day. Obviously, result didn't go our way, but the atmosphere there was just incredible. Everyone was behind them, obviously, except the Barcelona fans. But everyone was behind them. And yeah, it was a great day. Just shame about the result.
Yeah, definitely shame by the result and shame by some of the decisions that didn't go our way.
Yes.
Even the VAR, they could have checked them, they could have rectified them, but they chose not to. But I'd like to focus on the Chelsea side of things. Coming into this 1-0, you have that belief, but also I think the nerves kick in, sold out Stamford Bridge. I'm not saying that's the reason why, but like you said in the Manchester United game, I think we just started off maybe a little bit slower, maybe a little bit more focused on the defensive side of things. We know Barcelona have great talent and they can turn any game around regardless of where it is. But we also had our chances, and in that first half we could have easily maybe gone one up, but instead we go down one. And at that point you then start seeing a little bit more of game management. But were you nervous when we won one down? Did you think we could turn it around before all the incidents and the decisions went against us?
Yeah, I mean, when we went one down, I don't think it was anything. It wasn't unexpected. I mean, you knew Barcelona were going to come back fighting after the game for them. You know, they were going to come back trying to get a bit of revenge. And the goal, it wasn't necessarily a bad goal from our side. It was a very well taken finish from Bonmati, and it got a deflection off. I think it was Buchanan, and went past Hannah Hampton. There was nothing she could do about it. That point, you do start to get that little bit of nervy feeling of what's coming now. Are they just going to go for it? And to be honest, we defended all right in that first half. I don't think we did have chances that we really should have taken on a couple of them. You know, there was quite a few that was towards shooting right towards us in the first half where we were sat, and there's chances that we should have taken. But there was still a positive kind of atmosphere around. You know, it was 1-1. We were still right in the game. And at halftime, I was kind of like, you know what? We're still in this game and anything can happen in the second half. We saw that we had chances. And I think we were building into the game. And then obviously the second half happened and there was some really pretty shocking decisions in that second half that, in my opinion, robbed us of the chance to win. I think it's the best way of saying it. Obviously, I'm not saying that it robbed us of the win, because I don't know if we were going to go on and win. But I think it robbed us of a very good chance to win.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to put it. Is second half, you never know what happens. It's about keeping it down to one and then getting one on the other end. And it's still a different game at 1-1 versus losing a player for a decision that honestly should have been overturned. And
it's
you could see
Emma Hayes
at
it wasn't
end.
Even a yellow card.
Yeah, it wasn't a yellow card. It wasn't a foul. She wins the ball. It's a physical sport. You're going to have follow-throughs and things like that. So it was definitely disappointing as a Chelsea fan to see that go against us. But I almost went back to, and I hate making this comparison, but we on the men's side have had some terrible decisions go against us, against Barcelona. And this almost felt like that. That felt like a moment where we had a chance and it was just snatched away from us, even without us getting the full opportunity to realize if we could win or take advantage of that. But I think we still held on. Of course, at that point, when Buchanan is sent off, it's 59th minute. It's a different game at that point because you're going to go defensive. You're going to try and protect. And Barcelona now sense that they smell blood and they know something is coming their way. But we held on. We held on for 15 minutes. It ultimately came down to a penalty decision, which, again, was soft, to say the least. Soft. And you could argue that should have been overturned as well, but it stays and Barcelona get the second. And then Emma Hayes makes the changes, but it just wasn't clicking at that point. And ultimately we go out, but you see, I saw Emma Hayes at the end. She mouthed the words and you could read them pretty visibly on TV. She's like, I feel like I've been robbed. And that's how we felt as all Chelsea fans.
Oh, 100%. As you say, with the red card, it's in my opinion, I don't think she realized that she'd already given Buchanan a yellow. Because if you look at it, she is very quick to give that the yellow out, but she doesn't. Then it takes her a couple of seconds to realize that she's about to brandish the red. So I don't think she realized she gave her a yellow initially. But as I say, it wasn't even a yellow and the penalty was soft. It was really soft. Minimal contact, but you see them given. And was it clear and obvious enough for it to be overturned by VAR? Probably not. But the girls they did themselves proud at the end of the day. I mean, having to try and defend for half an hour with 10 players against that Barcelona side, it's hard. You know, as soon as you go down to 10, it's kind of a case of this is going to be an interesting last half hour. But they did themselves proud, and I think it was tough. It was tough to watch towards the end because it was kind of Barcelona were all over us at the end. And but not to be. It just wasn't to be. It wasn't our day. I mean, just minutes before Kadisha gets sent off, we hit the post through Nuskin. And it's like, had that gone in, you're looking at a very different story. And that's the thing. It's one of those what ifs.
Yeah, and that's honestly been the story of Champions League journey under Emma Hayes is what if. And she's going to walk away. She's going to leave without that trophy in her cabinet as a Chelsea manager. But honestly, she's brought us a long way to even be in a position where we're talking about being a step away from a final and beating Barcelona away. So we've made a lot of progress, but it's another learning step and learning curve here, which is even though you can win in the first leg, you still need to be ready for the second leg and be aware. Not that they weren't, but you can see in a flash of a decision, things can easily go the other way and change. So that brings us down to, well, we're not winning the Conti Cup. We're not winning the FA Cup. We're definitely not winning the Champions League. But we still have hope in the WSL, which is something that we win anyway, right? And so from the disappointment of Barcelona, we go away to Liverpool 4 days later. And we're expecting, as we do as Chelsea fans, a response. And maybe we get a response, maybe we don't. But we very easily let Liverpool score after we've come back and then get the winner. And it's 4-3 in that game. And we're now looking at it and saying, in the space of maybe 3 weeks, all our hopes of a title are gone. But before I get into what happened this past weekend, what were your thoughts after that Liverpool game? Was it just we've thrown it all away?
Well, first of all, it was game of the season for me. It was one of the best games of football I've watched. Obviously, yeah, we came out on the losing side of it. But it was end-to-end. It was such an open game and it was brilliant to watch. But I think from our side of it, we were mentally tired. You know, that had been a really rough, month? Losing the Conti Cup, losing the FA Cup, losing then Barcelona at home in front of a sold-out Stamford Bridge. It's going to be tough. So I think it was a tired performance up at Liverpool, and you know we'd conceded two goals from set pieces all year, and we conceded three from corners in one game up at Liverpool. And the thing is, we never play well up in Liverpool. It seems to be a bogey place for us to go at the minute. We've lost a couple of games up there. So, and they're a good side. They're pushing for fourth place in the league this year. Let's not underestimate that as well. You know, they're kind of aiming to be best of the rest, really. And they've had a really good season. So I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. But by the same token, I did at that point think it was done. In terms of the league, I was like, that could be the fatal blow, because no team's ever won the league having lost three games. And especially City have just looked so strong. And I think, as Emma Hayes said, they've been so consistent. I think that's been the thing with us this year. We have shown that bit of inconsistency, whereas City haven't. So at that point, I was a bit like, that's a tough one to take. And you could see at the end, you could see the players were absolutely devastated. And that was pretty hard to watch. At the end of that one, I was like, that could be it. That could be City's title.
Yeah, and as you say, it was a game that went back and forth. We took the lead. We then went 2-1 down. We get the equalizer to make it 2-2 in the 80th minute. We then concede in the 81st minute. It becomes 3-2. We then score again through an own goal, make it 3-3. And you're thinking, there has to be a winner here for Chelsea because of what we're chasing. But maybe we go too far out. We expose ourselves. We overdo it. We're not alert. We concede in the 92nd minute. And I believe it was from a corner. And we just lose it right there, 4-3. But from a neutral perspective, a brilliant game. And I'm sure Man City at that point were celebrating because it essentially meant that title was going to them as long as they held up their end of the bargain. And even Emma Hayes comes out and says it's pretty much over, even though mathematically it wasn't. But then, Ray, our friends are in North London who've been critical of us, have borrowed socks from us, have beaten us in the final. Turn this around, going to Man City, or I believe they were they were away to Man City.
Yeah.
And losing 1-0 until the 89th minute when they equalize and then score again in the 92nd minute to make it 2-1. And you know what's funny? I didn't watch this game. I don't think it was on TV here in the US. But I looked it up and I was just keeping up and I saw it was 1-0 Man City. And I'm like, all right, well, just be humble. And I think, well, we're not winning this title. And then suddenly in one of the group chats, I get 2-1 Arsenal. And I'm like, what is going on? So I looked it up again and it did say 2-1. And then I'm sitting there just refreshing, watching the clock slowly move along. I think it went up to like almost 100 minutes and Arsenal secure the win. And then Chelsea come out against Bristol and just blow them away. An 8-0 win, make up the goal difference. And now it's back in our own hands.
Yeah, what a day. I think if you had said to me in the morning that we were going to have it back in our hands in terms of the goal difference as well, I think I would have laughed you out of the room. I mean, for Arsenal to do what they did up at City was massive. You know, that's a huge result. I think I said in the last one, in our last chat, that's going to be the game that decides the title. I mean, that was assuming that we had beat Liverpool at this point. But, you know, I said that was going to be the game. And for them to go up there and turn it around in the last 10 minutes to win that game 2-1, incredible from them. And then for us to do what we did against Bristol in that last home game, it was massive, massive performance. Like, and I think the second half was the most ruthless I've seen us all year. You know, when we even went 5-6-0 up, we are still grabbing that ball and running straight back to the halfway line to get going again. Guru was phenomenal.
That's what belief does to you, right, Ray?
Oh, it really does. And I think having that result earlier in the day to then, you know, come back is just massive.
And, yep.
You know, and to come away with an 8-0 win, be ahead on goal difference, that's massive. That's massive. And it's, as I say, it's not what I expected to happen at the start of the day.
No, because, I mean, you even see it from what Emma Hayes says against Liverpool. It's over. We start announcing that Marin Mielde is leaving, Frank Kirby is leaving. You almost feel like, in a way, the club have accepted or decided that these might be the right moments ahead of the final home game to announce some of these things to provide a good send-off, because there is going to be no end-of-season celebration or things like that. But that result from Arsenal, I mean, I know we banter them, we maybe don't like them that much, but they did us a massive favor. But it was still down to us to go out and do the job against Bristol, which we did. So that leaves us, Ray, Man City in first, 21 games played, 52 points, 45 goal difference. Chelsea in second, 20 games played, 49 points, 46 goal difference. So we still have a game in hand. And if we win that, which means we could win 1-0, we could win 2-0, we could, whatever be the result, we're going to up this goal difference by at least one, which means we would be on 52 points, 47 goal difference, maybe more. I think we need to be smart about what we do against Tottenham because we can't overcommit. But regardless of what happens, we need to get the win because that will put us back on top. And then we have to go away to United, which, again, is not an easy game to play. We've just spoken about how we lost to them in the final. But I think on the final day, with something to play for, I will always back Chelsea.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up pretty perfectly there. I think going to Tottenham in what a week and a bit's time now. I think with that, it's a case of get the win. Doesn't really hugely matter about the score, but we just need to win because then it gives us a 2, potentially 3 goal cushion going into that final day. And as you say, this team on a final day of a season, if there's something to play for, I'd back us any day of the week. Yes, it's at Old Trafford, which is, I don't think we've ever played at Old Trafford, so it's a new one for us. But I'd back this team to go and get a result. And it depends. Obviously, City, I think City are away to Villa. So, I mean, I'd love to see Villa do a job for us as well. They're playing at Villa Park and it's Carlo Ward's last game as manager for them as well. And they've been a bogey side for Villa over the last few years. So, you know, I wouldn't bet against it. And I think if we can go to Tottenham, get a result, I think we should be in a decent position to hopefully turn a position where we weren't going to win this league before Sunday, in my opinion. I didn't think we were going to win it after that Liverpool result. But we're kind of snatching victory from the jaws of defeat here. And, you know, I think it would be incredible. It'd be a brilliant way to end the year.
It would be a brilliant way to end the year. It would be a brilliant way to send Emma Hayes off. But I think we need to stay focused on ourselves. We have two games. We said this before. I think we had 8 with the potential of 2. We obviously lost those 2. So we've gone through 6. We were down to 2. We just have to find a way to win them, regardless of what happens, refereeing decisions, injuries. We just need to find a way. And if we do, we end up with another title, and that will take us home in terms of a season where it's been very emotionally draining, especially in the last few weeks, but fully deserved because that's what Chelsea do. Ray, I know we're running out of time, so I'll just read off some of the awards that happened yesterday and get your quick reaction. And then when we do our end of season episode, we can maybe get into a little more detail with some of the players leaving and even the award winners. So Lauren James wins player of the season, voted by the fans. Jess Carter wins player of the season, voted by the players. And Katie Cox wins academy player of the season. And Muscovich wins the PFA community award along with Conor Gallagher from the men's side. So quick reactions to these wins and any surprises for you?
Jess Carter, player's player. I'm all for that. I think that's so deserved. I think she's had a great season stepping in when Millie's been out. So that one I'm completely on board with. Lauren James winning player of the year. I don't think that's quite right in my head. I would have rather Erin won that because I think Erin's been the player of the year this year. I think she's been phenomenal. But LJ's put in some absolutely standout performances as well. So you can't really, I don't agree with it, but by the same token, I can totally see why she's got it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, but we'll save that for a little more discussion at our season review episode, Ray. But as always, it's been a pleasure. Are we winning this title? Yes or no?
Yes, I'm going to go with yes.
Nice. I want us to win it too, and I think we will. It's that shot in the arm that we needed, and we got that from Arsenal. So hopefully we now make this a season where it's memorable for the right reasons versus what could have been a what if, like we said earlier in the episode. But that wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us. It's at the Premier Chelsea on all podcast providers, Instagram and Twitter.
Hey guys, the Premier Chelsea is sponsored by Kickoff Coffee. They are a top quality artisanal roasted coffee. In other words, they're Champions League winner and Premier League winner every single time. They deliver fresh bags directly to your home, so you don't have to go to a coffee shop and pick up something. And the best part about them is every bag gives back to soccer charities. 10% of the proceeds go to organizations that use soccer to promote youth social development in the underserved areas. Use our code TPCoffee15 to get 15% off your order. You can order at kickoffcoffeeco.com or check out the links on our social media. Thanks.